Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 470.
This week on the podcast, if aliens are real, the real question is, what are they doing for me?
And Doug Burgum inspires America with a simple message. Cheating works.
Plus, the GOP donor class abandons ship on DeSantis and moves on to a newer, equally unappealing governor.
And Tim Scott's campaign has clearly watched too many episodes of Ozark.
Plus, Donald Trump? Never heard of the man.
And the gerontocracy had a bad week.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey y'all, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's where we're at.
We're here to report some very important breaking news, which is that inflation is here and it's real.
We just paid just shy of $6 for a regular-sized bag of Cheetos.
It's outrageous.
Is there a Cheeto shortage?
I don't think there's a Cheeto shortage, and I also feel like Cheetos is the kind of food that in my mind is like alongside like Coca-Cola is supposed to be cheaper than the healthy alternative.
Yeah.
So like Coke is like cheaper than water. And, like, Cheetos are supposed to be cheaper than vegetables.
Than food, right.
Yeah, and that's not the situation that we found ourselves in earlier today at the grocery store.
No, we are, like, 75 bags of Cheetos away from bankruptcy.
That's right.
Isn't that what Kamala Harris has been going around telling everybody this week?
Yes.
Listen, I have some notes on that.
Really?
I just feel like they're starting to play with this whole Bidenomics thing. That they've said that they were going to do. And I just think it's a weird thing to do.
I think they're in over their heads.
For a million different reasons. But I feel like that's just not a selling point. Especially when you're touting how great and wonderful the economy is. Especially when you are also about to send tens of millions of people a bill for over $400 that they haven't had to pay in three years by way of their student loan payment.
That's right.
Hello, friends.
I feel like Bidenomics has been weirdly, because of their messaging mishaps, like associated with the restart in student debt payments, which means that what we're going
to
remember Bidenomics as being
right.
is a time
that, to pay more bills.
That we had to pay more bills.
That's right.
Bidenomics is going to sound like what drove all of us into bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And that's not what you want when you're branding it with your own name.
No.
It's like
don't tell me the economy is good when I'm buying $6 Cheetos.
No, that could possibly be right. It's not the ingredients of the Cheetos that caused that price, by the way, you guys. So like something, it's like fuel prices have gone up and like transportation.
And is it corporate price gouging? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Then fix that too. I don't really care what's causing the $6 Cheetos. I just need them to not look me in the eye after I've bought the $6 Cheetos and tell me that everything's fine.
Exactly. And if there's one thing I know we have too much of in America, it's corn. And if there's one thing I know that Cheetos must be made of, it's corn.
Right.
And so
we are having to constantly find things to make with corn.
Exactly. So I know that it's not that the Cheetos themselves became more inherently valuable because the amount of corn remained too high.
That's why the Coke's so cheap.
That's right.
Speaking of Coke.
Exactly. It's because of the corn syrup. Everything is made, everything that is corn-based.
Everything's connected, guys. This is a conspiracy theory podcast now. Sorry.
Well, speaking of conspiracy theories.
I know. The UFOs are here.
The UFOs are here. And not only that.
And maybe the aliens
maybe the
themselves.
Aliens. Here's what I have been hearing from most people about this. Because I think people were expecting to find themselves more shocked when the government admitted that they think they're aliens.
We need to be in the skiff is what the problem is.
Yeah.
Because we just couldn't get any good information out of anybody because it has to be behind closed doors.
Yeah. No. And I think the other thing is that people wanted to know, how does having aliens here affect me?
Right, exactly.
And currently, I don't have any sense of...
Well, there's a meme going around right now that is like, I'm not paying my student loans if there's aliens.
And listen, if that's how it affects me, then great. I'm here for the alien story.
I agree.
But I feel like if...
Also, don't pay them anyway.
Yeah, just don't pay them.
Anyway, sorry, go.
But I mean, like, short of discovering that aliens are going to, like, kidnap my mother... Like, I want to know, do I need to care? There's enough crises going on. It's like a billion degrees outside. The ocean is like boiling.
Don't worry. You're going to get used to it being that hot, though.
All right. I forgot that that's just going to become a... It just takes a little while to get used to it, you guys.
Yeah. The Washington Post ran a story under, what was it, like, climate solutions?
Yes. Their climate solution is just to suck it up because you're going to get used to being too hot. So don't worry about that. We're applying the same individualist solutions to that we applied to COVID. That's working perfectly because everyone I know has COVID. So everything's going according to plan. And don't worry yourself at all. And the aliens are here.
Well, I don't think that you're going to have to worry about that because what really happened in that hearing, which I obviously watched, like I said, I was going to.
Yeah, you promised.
is that the only reason that they're going to end up caring about this, and we'll probably get straight to the bottom of it faster than they've ever gotten to the bottom of anything in the history of the world, is that because it's a national security problem now.
Of course.
Yeah. So, like, we really, they're going to find out what's going on with these aliens faster than, you know.
Well, why do that? And why not do that instead of, you know, solving some of the actual national security problems that are going around, such as people, like, frying to death?
No, we're not going to be doing that.
Not worried about that.
No.
But we will find out about these aliens.
We're going to find out about
also, I'm pretty sure, listen, I have a theory about why this is going to be disappointing. I'm pretty sure because when they, you know, the evidence that they're citing to sort of suggest that they think that there's life, you know, outside of this planet is like boring fake science information that leads me to believe that when they do discover aliens, the aliens are going to be like protozoa we've never seen before, or like some bullshit like that. I don't want to find out the aliens are like single cell organisms. I want to I want the aliens to be interesting. I don't care about aliens that turn out to just be bacteria. There's enough bacteria I don't understand. I don't care where
we're
bacteria comes from.
We're thawing that out right now.
Exactly.
By the way.
Well, yeah, we're gonna get. We're getting smallpox.
Are we getting like yeah, we're getting like also like some old worms or something like that.
Yeah, like,
didn't we defrost
dug
some
up
worms
some
recently?
Worms recently that we re.
Well, I think just because it's so hot.
Yeah, that's what that's the kind of fun that global warming is.
I heard
bring.
That somewhere.
But I mean, like, do you care if bacteria is coming from space or the ground? Like,
if it's flying a ship, I care.
But no, exactly.
Because that's interesting.
If it's flying a ship, if it's like landing and beaming me up, like there's reasons I might care about that. None of them are just because of, for the sake of bacteria.
No,
I don't care at all what bacteria is going on until I find out what it's up to.
Right, and that it's antibiotic resistant.
Exactly. But like,
which it will be.
If land bacteria is antibiotic resistant, to me, that's the same as alien bacteria being antibiotic. Like,
well,
all
that's
of
fair.
Bacteria is the same problem to me, no matter where it came from.
Sure.
I don't care if it's alien bacteria, unless you can explain to me why that's special.
Got it.
Like, all bacteria seems wrong to me.
Yeah.
Is my point. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm not in STEM. So. Moving on to the areas I am an expert in. Let's talk about the GOP debates.
Elections. We've got an update.
We've got an update.
From last week.
That's right. If you were sitting at the edge of your seat wondering, will Doug Burgum make it into the GOP debate? Will his scam to give all of his donors $20 in exchange for $1 work? The answer is yes. Of course that grift worked.
It worked so well that it got him in and has now been taken over
by Francis Suarez.
Francis Suarez, the mayor of Miami.
Who has not qualified yet. But he's decided to take the Burgum playbook and run with it.
Yeah,
pretty soon. Sure. And you know what? I don't, like, listen. Great that Francis Suarez wants to get into the game. There's plenty of other rich people who could probably pull this off. This seems like Mike Pence still hasn't qualified, and that seems like, once we're all doing the grift, the reason he hasn't qualified is he can't find any donors.
Right,
you know
I was
what a great
say,
way to find donors
Mike,
is pay them.
Mike Pence should 100% do it because it would help him get over the edge. Francis Suarez, I don't know that it necessarily helps. It may help him get the numbers, but I don't think, you know, last week we talked about like how we thought it was going to also help Doug Burgum in the polls just because so many people were talking about it like being like an insane thing to do. People aren't going to talk about Francis Suarez doing an insane thing anymore because like Doug Burgum did it. So now, like, when I heard that he was doing it, my response was eye roll.
Exactly.
Not like that might be genius.
Right.
You know,
like, Mike Pence just needs to get into the debate.
Right,
it doesn't matter.
Say, Mike Pence already has the polls.
Yeah.
I just don't think that shtick for Francis Suarez is going to help in the polls.
Yeah.
It might get him the donors, but it's not like it's not going to move the numbers like it did.
When
for
he has a second scam running where he's also entering people into a sweepstakes for a chance at $15,000 in tuition assistance, which if that doesn't tell you something
about
what's wrong with the Republican platform.
Also, you know, without knowing for sure, I can take a pretty educated guess that he also thinks that there's not a student loan problem.
For sure. Why would there be when you can enter a sweepstakes by donating $1
doesn't
to him?
Doesn't want to do anything about the cost of education.
Absolutely not. He's giving four people $15,000 or
solved.
Whatever. Solved. That's four people with a college education.
Yep.
Asa Hutchinson only has 11,000 donors, so that's getting increasingly sad.
Guys.
It's...
I would like to think that I could cobble something together close to that.
I was going
to
say...
As a non-entity in the world.
Perry Johnson has 23,000 donors. He's not even a real person.
Yeah.
And he, I want to point out, is running his own scam, where he added that all of his donors are eligible to attend a free concert in Iowa featuring Big and Rich, a country music duo. So he's attempting his own version of the scam. And somehow has more than doubled the Asa Hutchinson unique donors number by doing so.
A real life governor of an actual place.
Yeah, that's right.
Asa Hutchinson.
Also, Perry Johnson has the 1%. There's
11,000 Republicans just in Arkansas.
There would have to be, given how many Republicans are getting voted into office from the citizens of Arkansas. Perry Johnson also, by the way, maybe the reason for his success is that he's giving away copies of his book to anyone who donates. 2 cents to save America.
That's the book?
That's the book. Which, by the way, reminds me that I have forgotten to remind you for many weeks at a time that Vivek Ramaswamy, who, of course, is long in the debate pool, wrote a book called Woke Incorporated, Inside Corporate America's Social Justice Scam.
Yeah, that's why he's doing such a
big... We did mention that earlier, but I feel that we have not been mentioning that regularly.
Right. He is made for this moment in the Republican Party.
Woke Incorporated.
Yeah.
Like, this is...
He literally wrote a book about what everyone is trying to do in the party. Like, he's like the expert on what Ron DeSantis is attempting and failing to do.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And but he's like the Andrew Yang of the thing, where he's you know, the tech cool guy. There's, even for the people that are in the debate. So here are the debate qualifiers, a list as of, we read it last week, but here's the full list as of now. It's Trump, DeSantis, Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, Chris Christie, and Doug Burgum.
Yeah.
Ron DeSantis has been having a rough go of it.
Woof.
This week he let go of a third of his campaign staff.
Yeah.
For success reasons, guys, don't worry about it. Not because his campaign is flailing, but because they're coming up with a new and exciting strategy whereby they're bleeding donors and don't have any supporters.
Are any of the remaining two-thirds going to talk to him about how he speaks to people in public?
No, and in fact, they're doing the opposite, because part of the restructuring that they're doing is trying to get him out there.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that last week. And then we saw videos of said him getting out there-ness.
Yeah.
And he should, get him back as I said last week... Find the man a bunker.
Yes, get him right back in there. He is not a person who has been able to correctly mimic a human laugh.
No. There was that laugh video, which was super uncomfortable. Horrifying. And then even more uncomfortable when he walked away and, like, completely sort of, like, changed.
Yes.
Like, you know. And then also the one where he was, like, accused that, like, small child in Iowa of eating too much sugar because she had a slushie, which he had to ask what it was, by the way. Couldn't identify
never,
it, which
never
is, like,
seen a slushie.
That's disqualifying.
Also, he's our age. I know for a fool. I'm for a fool. I know for a fact that you would have to be a fake person to not know what a slushie is.
Yeah.
If you're a man in your early 40s.
That's right. Also, that photograph of him in his little kitten heels.
First of all, there's a few things going on. The shoe selection overall.
Well, right. There's the boots.
There's the boots. There's the kitten heels. He still has not figured out how to correctly hold his arms.
Hold his arms. No.
And it turns out that his face gets sillier when he tries to emote from it. So, like, you know, part of the reason it's so uncomfortable to watch him in person.
Right. There were all those pictures of him smiling this week, too.
Do not look at him smiling, you guys.
Oh,
it is not comfortable
to
look at.
It is uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. No,
not a man who looks happy smiling.
Certainly not.
No.
Not a man who even looks really like human smiling. Like, I'm thinking it's as if he's, like, trying to mimic human behaviors, but, like, from the point of view of, like, a robot who doesn't have access to arms. Like, it's just, like, something about the way that he's using his face and limbs there's an uncanny valley-ness to
it,
you know?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And it turns out that people hadn't noticed because he'd been mostly talking to Floridians before this. And so it's like, who was going to find out? Right. And I think that as more people are encountering him, more people are learning about this uncanny valley-ness. And that is why a bunch of his donors at the moment are switching teams and trying to convince Glenn Youngkin, governor of Virginia, to jump into the race. I don't know how this could possibly be...
Imagine being a billionaire Republican and being like, God, we thought Ron DeSantis was it, and now we just must have Glenn Youngkin. We have to switch, we have to change course.
Like, there's this, so this one billionaire,
Glenn Youngkin.
Thomas Petterfee, had been a DeSantis supporter, halted his contributions back in the spring over DeSantis's stances on abortion and book banning, which is so confusing to me, because it's like, join a different party then. What, abortion? What are his stances on abortion that you could possibly disagree with and be a part of the Republican Party?
I know.
So he's one of the people who has started to kind of talk about Glenn Youngkin as, quote, an ideal candidate. Has kind of jumped ship on DeSantis and is trying to push Youngkin into the race. But also, a few other people have started to migrate, one being Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, my.
who there is reporting, at least in the Times from earlier in July, that they're hoping Youngkin will jump into the race. And it seems like, you know, his media networks or outlets are kind of like getting more critical of DeSantis. I think that's why you're hearing so many stories about how his campaign is imploding, is because the Fox News empire is starting to turn on him. But it turns out Murdoch has been sort of like flirting with a Youngkin candidacy. And then Wilbur Ross, who was the commerce secretary under Trump, he's hosting an event in the Hamptons that's not a fundraiser. It's just Youngkin talking to a bunch of rich people.
Oh, God. A chance to listen to Youngkin talk about how he's going to take over the Virginia. Listen, the first part of that sentence, a chance to listen to Youngkin talk.
Already so unappealing.
Who's going to that?
I can't imagine you're in the Hamptons and you're like, I should go listen to Glenn Youngkin talk.
Right. And I love that you pulled this statistic, because I've been seeing other people talk about this as a reason why they're going to draft Glenn Youngkin, because his approval rating in Virginia is 57%. But I would like to remind everyone that Ron DeSantis just re-became the Florida governor in a total landslide.
Landslide.
Total landslide. And then he left and had other people be like you said, it's like, what are the people of Florida? What are they supposed to be knowing about anything?
Exactly.
Like, he got to literally everywhere else and they were like, no, thank you, friends.
No.
I feel like Glenn Youngkin is going to have a similar situation.
For sure.
Where he's going to like take his 57% out to wherever he takes it, and people are going to be like, you're also not a real human, sir.
No, it's, there's no way that, and like, also, Ron DeSantis ran against Charlie Crist in that race, I want to remind you.
Well, and
he won in a landslide
against Glenn Youngkin ran against Terry McAuliffe.
Exactly. Like, he won in a landslide against a known entity and is still failing this hard at being in public. And Charlie Crist is somebody who probably would be doing better nationally right now than Ron DeSantis, because Charlie Crist, despite being terrible, is somebody who has like been outside of Florida.
Right.
You know?
That's true.
Which is the same with Terry McAuliffe. Terry McAuliffe used to run the national DNC. Like, Terry McAuliffe has been outside of Virginia. Glenn Youngkin, no one's been talking to him outside of Virginia.
But both of those two are also total asshats.
That's another problem.
When you're going around being like, look at me winning my election by so many points against Terry McAuliffe, it's like, congratulations, I guess.
Right. That doesn't help you know anything about what your candidacy could look like for president.
No.
These are people that would be unacceptable outside of
Terry McAuliffe is like a total loser hack and ran a shit campaign by all accounts.
Yeah. Charlie
Crist. We talked about him on
also,
the podcast.
Also, famously, loser asshat.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that Glenn Youngkin, because he has not had the kind of, he's had a national spotlight that has been largely absent of him himself.
Nobody knows anything about him.
No. I know that he's an asshole who's running Virginia.
Yeah.
But I don't really know, like, I just know that he's someone who has had certain scandals and missteps inside of Virginia that have been big drama.
Yeah.
And that they are not stories that are necessarily nationally reported, and that those are things that we would find out about pretty quickly if he jumped into the race. He would be another flash in the pan like Ron DeSantis.
Ooh, before we get off of this, and before I forget, because it's not on here, Abigail Spanberger.
Yes, talking about running for governor
of Virginia.
Virginia.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a suspicion that she had her eye on higher office, given the way that her votes were.
Right, given the way that she's
careful.
Been acting like a Republican, which is how Democrats think that you win in Virginia.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Curious to see what that... Well, I'm curious what her profile is going to be outside of her rural district.
I don't know.
I mean, because in a lot of ways, even though she's been trying to sort of appeal to the, like, right wing of Virginia politics, she's, like, really a creature of the hill type. I mean, she has a national security background. She's really like a Northern Virginia type.
Yeah.
Huh. So it's like a little confusing.
Yeah.
I'm curious to find out what happens.
Find out.
But we have one more.
That's in 25.
That's in
25. They have off year elections.
They have off year elections in Virginia. Well, as you know, because Virginia's off year elections are the bellwether elections.
Oh, of course. We learn everything about everything from those elections.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we're going to have Virginia elections this year. And those Virginia elections.
Oh, that's right. In 23.
State legislature elections are this year. So we're going to. What's going to happen is, based on what happens in Virginia, we're going to either have to panic about 2024 or feel unnecessarily confident about 2024. We're going to learn whatever the lesson is that helps us the least, and we're going to take that lesson forward, knowing that it shouldn't be informing our decisions to the extent that it is.
That's right.
So just know that to yourself. Also, in the Times this week, there was a story about Tim Scott's fundraising scam that taught us about a general fundraising scam that's very popular with GOP campaigns. You might not be shocked to hear. That is kind of wild, which is so...
So crazy.
This is something that obviously Trump did this, but a lot of campaigns are doing this, especially on the right, where... So you, there are all these disclosure requirements around how campaigns spend money that are designed to, like, you know, make sure that we know where public money is being spent, essentially,
yeah.
Where money on these campaigns is being spent. So what campaigns are doing is this, like, weird workaround where they pay, like, shell companies that are fake so they can siphon right. campaign funds off and obscure what they're spending the money on. And so this is a really common thing. Everyone's doing this. But Tim Scott has spent almost all of his campaign funds in this manner. So he entered the race with a war chest of $22 million. His campaign has raised $5.8 million from April through June.
Uh-huh.
And during that time, he laid out about $6.6 million in funds.
Yeah.
But $5.3 million of that $6.6 cannot be traced to an actual vendor. It's going to these two, like, possibly fake entities that have, like, P.O. boxes at a Staples in suburban Virginia or something like that. Have no online presence, no, you know, no other record of work with the FEC, like anything like that. And they were set up by the same person in just a few months before Tim Scott entered the race. Wow. So basically, he is spending almost all of his campaign funds that he has raised from hardworking Americans
right.
On, like, shadow entities where we can't find out what his campaign is spending their money on because they basically have, like, removed it to a vendor that doesn't exist. So they're like, the reporting is one step removed from anything useful.
They're just laundering money. The campaign is laundering money, essentially.
Is what I'm saying, yes.
Huh. Cool.
So that's super cool. Obviously,
like, for what?
These
so
laws,
like,
are there to safeguard against corruption.
Yeah.
And Tim Scott seems like he might be up to corruption.
I know. It is just sort of so bizarre because, like, he's a person who sort of, like, I feel like at least is doing a good job of acting like they are genuinely running for president.
I know.
So I'm just curious as to, like, how it makes an amount of sense that, like, $6.6 million has gone to someplace other than the campaign. And if it is just somehow coming back to the campaign, then why does it need to go to a shell company? I guess I'm confused as to
why bother doing this if you're actually running a campaign.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think
unless
probably...
you're not, and he's even duped me into thinking that he is. I don't know.
I think that there's probably a few reasons you would do this. One is so that you could get away with a lot of what we know that the Trumps do, and we know other campaigns do this as well, where you, like, basically hire friends and family to do jobs that are unnecessary to the campaign's functioning, but, like, theoretically contribute to the campaign. So I assume in this money he's paying for his family's travel. He's you know, probably houses for his in-laws or whatever. Like, he's buying stuff that is... And this obscures so much of the money that, like, you can't even really figure out, like, it would be easy to point to some of those expenditures probably and be like, see, these are legitimate campaign expenditures, and obscure the rest of it.
Right.
So there's that piece of it. And then you don't, you know, have to find out if what you're spending the money on is actually, like, a legal use of campaign funds.
Yeah.
Also, it probably means that a lot of the funds can be used in ways that maybe the public would not, even if they are legitimate campaign fund uses, that the public would find unsavory. So, like, I think that this sort of obscures, you know, what their advertising spending is, how much of the money is going to what kinds of campaign expenditures. Like, you know, are you blowing all of your money on, like, you know, events or TV ads or certain markets? Like, you don't really have to. And it also, as a third reason, I can't believe I've come up with three reasons now. I'm doing this off the top of my head, you guys.
Are you a secret,
I'm an evil,
like,
mastermind.
I was going to say, since when do you have a business background?
The third reason is it prevents your opponents from knowing where you're spending the money. So if you're spending a certain amount of money on, like, you know, the Iowa ads market or whatever, it makes it seem like he's just mysteriously on the tip of everyone's tongue. Sadly, he's not, so this is not even working. But,
Well, I will say that from my boots on the ground Iowa team.
Right. Yes, of course.
It's Tim Scott all day, every day.
Well,
everywhere you look.
And
Tim
instead,
Scott.
You're hearing all about how Doug Burgum is desperately begging people to give him a dollar so he'll give them $20 and spending all that money on Iowa to get into the polls. And Tim Scott just seems like a viral sensation.
Yeah.
And in reality, it's that he's probably secondhand spending all of his laundered money on Iowa ad buys, and everyone is thinking to themselves, why am I always thinking about Tim Scott? And it's because of that. So we learned a few things here. One is that I am, like, an evil business mastermind. And I should be richer than I am with all that
for sure
knowing in my head. And two is that Tim Scott's up to shenanigans.
Yeah.
And three, to once again continue my couple of things being three things, it feels like this is actually, this is something that a lot of campaigns are doing, and it's, we should be looking at these sort of like
for sure
laundered, undisclosed expenditures and what percentage of campaign expenses they're accounting for in every campaign, because I guarantee it's higher than we think it is.
For sure. And everybody should be wanting to do this, because, like, people are giving Tim Scott money. I mean, against
all
of their better judgment.
Yeah,
but I mean,
no, it's
like, I would, if this was happening to a candidate that I had given a bunch of money to, then I would be like, friend.
Where's my money going? Yeah. That's what I would be saying.
Yeah.
Of course, maybe most of Tim Scott's funding is coming from, like, shadowy rich people who don't even declare.
Well,
so it's like some PAC somewhere that's not declaring anything. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
This basically turns your campaign expenses into PAC money, though, which is unfair.
Yeah.
Because, like, how can we investigate whether it was illegal use of the money if we don't know what the money was?
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on to Donald Trump, who's had nothing. He's in a world of legal hurt this week.
I know. Did you see that clip of him coming onto the stage at, like, some Iowa event the other day? And it was, like, some country song playing, and the lyrics were, like, someone might go to prison. Like, while he was going on to the... Yeah, it was pretty good.
He really understands theater, though, in a way.
Yeah, I don't know that he chose that.
No, so I think
it sounds like maybe he didn't, but it's still good. It's good.
I feel
though.
Like the
Trump, ratings were good.
The
for
Trump
that.
World
yeah.
understands theater, even if he himself is not always in on the joke. So here's the story. We're waiting to find out about January 6th indictments. Literally, reporters this week on Thursday were sitting in a federal courthouse in D.C. waiting to find out about the January 6th indictments.
Right.
When news broke in Florida.
And supposedly in Georgia, they were, like, putting up barricades, like, at the Fulton County jail,
it
like, on Thursday or Friday.
Every indictment story was, like,
coming to a head.
We thought
it was all going to happen. Yeah.
Literally, it was, like, news from multiple states and multiple territories reporting that there's some kind of new Trump indictment news. And listen, we've all been waiting for the next indictment drop.
Yeah.
So, like, we're excited to hear about it.
Well, we got one.
And we got one. And it was not even a new one.
Right. It was not a radar.
We got a new indictment drop in an old case.
Yeah. And a new person being indicted also.
And a new person being indicted. Two new people being indicted.
Yeah.
So on Thursday, as everyone's waiting with bated breath to find out if either Georgia or D.C. are going to happen, we get news that there are now new felony charges against Trump and two employees in Mar-a-Lago, Walter Nauta, who we'd heard about from
the
Bedminster case.
There was one charge against him.
There was one charge against him. And then Carlos de Oliveira, who's somebody who works in Mar-a-Lago. And so now we have two new and exciting charges to report to you from a case, from the Mar-a-Lago documents case, which was a case we already thought we'd learned everything about.
Right. I think really what that signaled was that the special prosecutor here is not fucking around.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically...
That's really... Because the charges were just sort of like... Kind of like some ancillary charges that are sort of like just additional of the same charge.
Yeah.
Really, ultimately. And then we added, you know, somebody who worked at Mar-a-Lago. But it was just sort of like, oh, we're going big here is what's happening.
Yeah, because they're big charges for being ancillary charges. Like, they're ancillary charges because the charges in general are big in this case.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're like... Not small charges.
No.
There's a count of willful retention of information related to national defense, because that presentation that was about Iran,
he
was waving around
supposedly
at Bedminster,
they
now know what document it is. And that's the paper where we have the tape of him
talking about
saying that this is a secret and I could have declassified it, but I didn't.
And I can't now.
And I can't now. Right. So he got charged with a new charge related to that. And then there's a new obstruction of justice charges against both him and Walt Nauta and then Carlos de Oliveira, who's a Mar-a-Lago employee. Because the Justice Department tried to subpoena security footage from Mar-a-Lago. Mm-hmm. And these three basically cooked up like a Mr. Magoo style plot to keep it out of the hands of the FBI. And then also, De Oliveira was telling another employee, the boss really wants this done.
Oh,
like,
my God.
There's, like, word that he was, like, spreading the word that they were committing a crime, basically.
Yeah. This is totally a Mr. Magoo situation.
It's full
100%.
Mr. Magoo.
I cannot wait for the, I almost said movie, but I need it to be longer than that.
I mean,
it's literally, like Donald Trump called one of these two to talk to them about the security footage, and one of them inevitably, like, answered a banana. There's no, like, that's what's going on here.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's full silliness of the scale that somebody whose entire political experience was in Hollywood would think was real. Like, I think part of the reason that all of this is so silly is that Donald Trump is doing, like,
he's doing a TV version, yeah. Which is why I want the TV version.
Exactly. His understanding of what it is to be in a situation like this is informed exclusively by movies and television, and he's doing the things that you do when you're informed by movie and television. It's not even, like, Watergate-level schemey. It's so funny.
I know.
Meanwhile, he's, aside from calling everybody liars, he's roaming around being like, oh, they should hold off on these charges because I'm running for president. But then when he was president, he said they couldn't do it because he was president. When is the right time, Donald Trump, for us to pursue these charges? I assume the answer is never, in your opinion.
Well, never, because it's just a witch hunt.
But, so, one thing that I think is interesting in relation to this particular, there's other legal news, but in relation to this case in particular, is NPR was doing some polling around it, and they had done some polling a few months ago around it as well. And so they asked voters whether, you know, whether or not Donald Trump had done anything illegal or just unethical. 51% said that he had, and that's gone up 6 points since June. So I think it's at 57% or whatever.
Sure.
That was back in June. And so in July, they asked again, it's gone up 6 points. They asked Republicans, 50% at the time in June when they first did this poll said he had done nothing wrong. That's now down to 41%, which means they're now outside of the margin of error on that, which means that slowly but surely, Republicans, listen, they're not going to turn around and be like, I was personally wrong.
No, right.
They're going to turn around and be like, they're just maybe I don't like this guy as much.
Right, I was going to say, they're just going to quietly move to different candidate. Back they're going to pretend slowly. As though they supported him the entire time.
That's right. And if anyone asks, they're going to be like, no, I like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But they're just not going to feel as good about it.
Yep.
They also asked GOP voters whether or not they want Trump to be the nominee last month. 64% said yes. That's now down to 58%.
Yep.
And listen, none of these numbers are going to move quickly, but with each new indictment story, they're going to just sort of like slowly diminish. And, you know, Trump already has not been able to get over 46% in an election poll, like a general election poll. And so he's already kind of like in a situation. He's not going to gain supporters at this point.
No,
he can only lose them.
Right. Yeah, we've always talked about that. Yeah. I mean, and everyone has, really. But I mean, like, he's at the ceiling.
I also think that, like, all of these cases are, like, fun, right? Like, this is a fun. This documents case is fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, the January 6th charges are not going to be fun.
No.
They're going to be scary.
That's true, yeah.
And I think that that might be the one that changes some.
Yeah.
Like, and this is something I've heard some pundits say it. I've read a few kind of like, you know, general, you know, stories that have kind of implied this. I think a lot of people are maybe expecting that to be the kind of turning point here, because a lot of these other cases are like, him, like the Stormy Daniels case is nothing but entertaining. The charges are boring and the case is entertaining.
Yeah.
This documents case is like nonstop laughs. It's just like, it's like serious charges, but he is acting like such a fool idiot the entire time. It is like nonstop hilarity. Every single thing we find out about it is funnier than the last thing. And even though it's incredibly serious charges.
Yeah, of course.
There's like
we're
a fun,
don't mean to downplay that,
whimsical
but yeah, I mean,
piece to this case that I think is great because it captures all of our attention because it's fun to read about.
Yeah.
The January 6th charges are going to fall amidst all of that. People are going to be excited about it because they're excited because in general, everything's been so entertaining.
But they're going to be very
and
much like,
be
holy shit.
Scary charges.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that a lot of people are expecting that maybe that's the point where, listen, he's going to have a base of support no matter what.
Right.
But there are going to be a lot of people.
That's where you might get like a, you know, sedition charge.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Like,
I mean, I don't,
there
we
be
don't
some
know,
people
but I mean, it's
that
like,
are
it's
like,
going to be.
Oh, was he trying to overturn an election that, like the kind I vote in?
Yeah.
Like, I think that that's just going to be a harder charge for him to beat on entertainment value.
Yeah.
And it's going to fall perfectly, if it comes soon, in the sort of pantheon of charges.
Yeah, sure.
Because it's going to either be that we're going to
you're going to have all the different types.
We're going to have all the different types.
So whatever it is that you care about, you can find something
you're
here to entertain
yourself.
You're
going to find a charge to entertain yourself with here. Right. Exactly. And we're going to all have been pulled in by these fun charges.
Right.
And then also, the next charge that's going to drop is either going to be a January 6th charge or it's going to be a Georgia charge. Both of those are overturning election charges.
Yeah.
I think if the Georgia one comes first, the January 6th one is really going to hit hard. I think it'll hit hard either way, but I just think the Georgia one won't hit as hard as the second charge as the January 6th one will.
Sure.
But if we're starting to see Republican numbers slowly erode, and look, they may go up and down a bit. So, like, you know, he may recover a bit and then they'll go down.
Yeah.
Like, don't count on these being permanently in recession or whatever. But I think if we're seeing any movement at all based on these charges, then just keep in mind that we have nothing but charges coming up. It's like a full charge calendar
right.
is coming up.
Yeah.
There are...
And it's not going to let... I mean, there might be ebbs and flows over the next year and a half. But yeah. I mean, like, some of these are going to go to trial before the election. Yes. So it's like... and that's the other thing, too.
They set a date for the trial.
Right. Well, and that's the other thing that I think Republicans sort of, like, have to be thinking about. And I realize a lot of Trump supporters are not necessarily thinking people. But I mean, like, the idea that your candidate that you have nominated in the official nominating process is going to be... you know, going to trial for at least some of these things, which could put him in jail until certainly the end of his life.
Yeah.
You sort of have to wonder if, like, look, some of them will still support him.
Of course.
But you have to ask yourself whether that's, like, maybe, like, a winning national election strategy.
Well, I was going to say, think about what this does to
ultimately what the Republican Party wants to do is win.
Exactly.
Right. So...
yeah, and it's not worth winning Donald Trump if you lose literally every other election.
Right.
And, yeah, I think that's, I think, why you're starting to see some operatives... try, like, flailing aimlessly looking for a candidate.
Well, and this always happens once you get closer to when you actually have to vote. And this doesn't necessarily happen in Republican primaries because they're always, like, looking for the craziest person. But, like, you know, you sober up a little bit as you start to have to actually vote for somebody.
Yeah.
So it's easier to say that you're going to vote for Donald Trump in a primary right now.
Over a year.
Because you're like, yeah, Donald Trump, like, you know. Right. And then you're like, might he not win this election?
Right. Is it looking like it's going to be nothing but drama from here on out?
Yeah.
And is that what I'm looking for when I also want my Republican gubernatorial candidate to win?
Right.
And I also want my congressman to win. And I also want my senator to win. Like, I just, this is not a smart way to run a national coordinated campaign.
No.
And listen, maybe they don't want to run a smart coordinated campaign. That's on them.
Fine.
Do you? I'm thinking all the time about the first season of Slow Burn, the Watergate season.
Yeah, Watergate, that's the first one, yeah.
The first season of Slow Burn, I remember them playing an interview with someone who was talking about going and drinking at a Queens bar that was very much like a Nixon, you know, bar. Okay. And, you know, I can see how a bunch of, like, blowhards in some random part of Queens were like, yeah, they're just going to, you know, essentially it's a witch hunt. They're just going after him because they don't like him, blah, blah, blah. And how he went back into that bar after Nixon had resigned, and it was like no one had ever heard of Richard Nixon.
Oh, yeah.
And I also think all the time about my mom in the teacher's lunchroom in, you know, an elementary school in New York City, public elementary school in New York City, where everyone loved Giuliani until they had never heard of Giuliani.
Right.
You know, it was like there was a year where even the UFT endorsed him.
Oh, yeah,
it was like
of course.
A whole thing. And she spent the whole time being like,
what
is wrong with all of you?
2002 maybe or something like that?
Like, probably. What is wrong with all... No, not even long before that. In the 90s.
Before that?
This is the 90s. By 2002, New Yorkers hated him. It was only America that liked him.
Oh, God. Okay.
But like, we're talking about in the mid-90s. When everyone was like, you know, right, his second term was really, the election for his second term was like the peak of his power. Where like, that election, he won handily, he tried to outlaw jaywalking the next year, and everyone turned on him.
Yeah.
And after that, it was like, you couldn't find a single person who admitted
who
to
ever
having,
supported,
who had ever heard of
Rudy. Nobody had ever voted for him before,
that's right.
Yet somehow he'd
yet
been
somehow
elected
somehow, had all been advocates for him for the last 5 years, and then all of a sudden, it was like, no one had heard of him again. So, so that's why when the discussion after, you know, in 2001, when everyone was like, you know, that was a primary day in New York, September 11th, for mayor. And so there was, you know, that was kind of like when everyone started being like, America's mayor, New Yorkers were like, fuck off. Get out of here.
Yeah.
But part of the reason was because everyone had already turned on him. But up until that point, there was like this weird era where the same thing with Bloomberg. The first, you know, you had all these people who loved Bloomberg. And then that third term happened. It was like no one had ever voted for Michael Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. No one had ever heard of him.
Right.
Like,
yeah,
this happens all the time with villains like this.
Yeah.
Where right when they seem like they're at the height of their powers, that's right before everyone's never heard of them again. And I feel like Donald Trump is a prime candidate for that treatment.
Oh, yeah.
Because all these blowhards are going to walk around being like, yeah, no, I voted for Donald Trump. And then
totally.
One day you're going to be like, remember when you voted for Donald Trump? And they're going to be like, no.
No. Uh-uh.
Yeah.
Who?
I never voted for him.
New phone. Who did?
Yeah, right. No, exactly.
No.
And it's not, you're going to sadly probably have to let them off the hook for that because you don't want to get into the argument about it. It's going to be very exciting to say I told you so, but it's not going to be that satisfying in the end because it's just going to probably make them dig their heels in. But like that, we're in prime new phone who dis territory right now, I feel like.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
Where that moment is on its way.
Yeah.
And, like, hopefully it comes before the election. It's going to come at some point.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it comes before... like, what I can't promise is that it comes before the election.
I know.
But it will come. We just need to do everything we can to usher it in.
Yeah.
And that...
exactly.
Actually, I feel like that's a good thing for Democrats who are feeling hopeless about everything to kind of sink their teeth into, is that you don't have to be responsible for convincing Trump voters that they should not vote for Donald Trump. You just have to make them want to forget that they did it in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
Like, your job... They're Republicans. Don't worry about them. They're not going to vote for Joe Biden. I don't even want to vote for Joe Biden. He's the least appealing candidate on the planet.
Yeah.
Your job here doesn't have to be to convince them to be Democrats. Like, at the moment, your job is to convince them not to be Trumpers. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
And we don't have to do it by telling them not to be Trumpers. You just have to make it so that it's too embarrassing.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly.
And that, we're working on.
We can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
In any case, there's been other legal news. Other Donald Trump legal news.
Of course there has.
He tried to sue CNN for calling his attempt to steal the election a big lie because he was mad that they were referencing a Hitler thing. Uh-huh. And so he tried to sue them for $475 million, LOL, for indirectly comparing him to Adolf Hitler.
Right.
His own appointee judge in Florida was like, no, this is dumb. Said CNN's use of the phrase "the big lie" in connection with Trump's election challenges does not give rise to a plausible inference that Trump advocates the persecution and genocide of Jews or any other group of people. So that's embarrassing. And then the other thing that he's up to right now is he's trying to get the federal appeals court to reverse a federal judge's decision from before that his hush money case with Stormy Daniels be heard in New York. They're pretty convinced that New Yorkers are going to convict him because New Yorkers are like, fuck this guy.
Right.
And so they keep just trying to move the case, and they periodically claim that, you know, it's because, like, it's you can move a case if it has something to do with, like, federal officials in their federal duties. But the first time that they tried to appeal this, the judge was like, no, this is a personal matter, not a presidential matter. This has nothing to do with your presidential duties. Fuck off.
Yeah.
And so last week they rejected his bid again to move it because what was going to happen was they were going to move it from New York and then they were going to try to argue that he was immune from prosecution everywhere else. Like, it was like they're basically trying to move it so that they can throw the case out. So, like, everyone's like, no. Right. So they just keep appealing it and it's going on forever. But actually, it's great that it's going on forever because it reminds everyone about the Stormy Daniels case on, like, a weekly basis. So, like... good work to them.
Right.
They're not thinking about this in terms of theater the right way.
No. You're right.
Like,
which is weird.
I feel like that's the thing that will ultimately take him down.
Yeah.
Is because it's the thing that takes Democrats down constantly. So I'm ready for someone else to be taken down by it. But, like, to not sort of know... He knows that his reaction when he is on camera is about theater. Like, he understands theater of it. His lawyers seem to have the same... They're keeping some of these cases in the news, I think, just to slow them down.
Probably.
But because there's so many of them, it's like actually creating the... It's like every week, like 14 different cases are in the news.
Yeah. It's like creating a tornado of just bad press.
And maybe it's a no-win situation. Because it's like hearing the cases would also be a tornado of bad press. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's your fault, Donald Trump. Stop committing crimes.
Hello.
Like... That's the easiest thing you can do.
We know there was Hunter Biden legal news this week.
Oh, yeah. And
do we know exactly what it is?
No, really.
No.
It was only right-wing news sources that were reporting it, so I assumed it wasn't important.
Well, everyone was reporting, I think, that there was news and that, like, I think people were talking about the judge, you know, not accepting the plea deal something like that. So that was sort of like a news thing. But, like, I said to somebody, I was like, I need somebody to explain this Hunter Biden thing to me. Like, I'm a toddler.
Yeah.
And I said that to somebody else who I know follows politics. And they're like, oh, yeah, the judge, blah, blah, this, that, the other. And I was like, I don't want to know about the judge.
Yeah.
I want to know what the core... conspiracy thing, because even that Marjorie Taylor Greene thing where she was showing porn was like, that was in an IRS whistleblower hearing, and I want to know what the IRS was whistleblowing about. And beyond that, I want to know why they think that probably has something to do with, like, I don't know, like human trafficking or whatever it is that they think about.
Yes.
I don't even know if they're equating the two things together. Somebody probably is, because that's what people there do. But, like, I want, if you know anybody who knows how to explain this to me that isn't Marjorie Taylor Greene, although I'd be happy to have her explain it to me also, but I'd love to know what's going on. And I am not going to read about it.
No.
And I'm not going to watch a thing about it. I'm not going to read about it.
Not only put it on this doc, but found a story yeah. opened that story.
Right.
And immediately read my brain glazed over and yeah. I couldn't tell you one thing
about it. Right, and then we removed it.
Yeah, that's right. I opened it with the intention of potentially pulling it for
right.
the stock.
Right, and then it would have been very fun if you would have been able to explain yeah. to me on this podcast, and then it would have been surprising, and it would have been great podcasting for everyone to listen to.
That's right.
To. But here we are. Do it.
I literally took one
look
at it.
That wasn't accusatory.
No. I took one look at it, and I was like, certainly not.
Right.
It couldn't yeah. have... It seemed like it was going to involve me having to read a second news story to explain how we got to the news story I was reading. Yeah, right. And I was just like, I'm out.
It certainly would have required a lot of fact-checking on your part.
Yes. And it also, when I first looked for the story, every news source that came up was either the National Review or Fox News.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And
yeah.
so I was like, I don't want to open any of these.
No.
And they all, and it was like the New York Post. Like, it was only yeah. the worst news sources.
I usually want to open the Post.
Well, I love because... a Post headline.
Well, right, yeah.
I mean, I love, my favorite is, I follow the New York Post on the PsyHealth Instagram account, not on my own, because I'm not, I don't hate myself, but the New York Post Instagram account is just a litany of the silliest headlines you've ever seen in
Amazing.
Your life, just like nonstop
yeah.
dropping in your feed.
Yeah, no, they're really it's doing stuff over
very
there.
Entertaining.
The headline writers
yeah.
are.
Those are the only yeah. writers of the New York Post that yeah. I like to carefully read the stories of. But
yeah.
in any case, so we're just skipping the Hunter Biden news for now, but if you are a person who knows about the Hunter Biden situation and wants to come on and explain it to us, like, we're here. You're welcome yeah. to do the research for us and tell us all about it.
Yeah.
So know that. Just reach out to us on, not Twitter, on X.
Oh my God. Have you seen the video of that?
Yes.
The X, like, blasting across
logo
from the.
Blasting
it
houses?
Reminded me of staying at your place.
I was going to say.
across the street from the bar.
Gave me flashbacks of my parents' apartment.
Yes.
This is, and because of that, I know full well just how annoying Elon
yeah,
Musk
course.
Is currently being to those people.
Yeah.
It couldn't be a crueler thing to do to people. God.
Yeah.
There is no amount of blackout shade that
no.
stops a strobing.
Uh-uh. No.
Like LED light. Just know that. So yeah. I'd murder him for that.
Oh my God.
Like, I'm happily calling for the murder of people that are doing that. It is about as cruel as it's like
no,
waterboarding
really
somebody.
I
it's,
know.
It's,
I feel like the tweet that's been making its way around the most is like somebody with that video. And it's like Elon Musk really has never thought about a second person.
Yeah. That's clearly. And not only that, I think he's thought about how to harass and control a second person. Like, I don't think that I think he has thought about a second person, but only in terms of
right.
what that person,
yes.
That person's misery would do for his own happiness.
Yes.
No, what an asshole.
Right. Yeah. Oh, God.
That should be punishable by death. I don't even believe in the death penalty, but I think that rises to the level of crime that I think overcomes my moral hesitations about the death penalty.
God, so awful.
Awful.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the gerontocracy.
Right.
It's deep gerontocracy month right now
God.
In Congress.
It really is.
The Senate is a mess.
The Senate is a mess.
And it is a mess of old people who don't know what they're doing. And one such old person is Mitch McConnell this week. As you probably saw, if you live in society, was like speaking at a weekly GOP news conference on Wednesday and just like froze.
Yeah.
In like
brain,
a way that suggested that he was like maybe having like a stroke or some
yeah.
kind of weird half seizure or something.
Yeah.
He literally just froze. He was silent for 19 seconds. And
oh God. It
that's
was that long.
A long time.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Like it sounds like not a long time
no,
until you
time.
Count 19 seconds
just to
out
stand
in your head.
In silence and look like
mid-sentence
that.
And like
yeah.
yeah. And then he just sort of was like escorted
so
away.
So it's a long time for everyone to have let him
to stand
do that
there
also.
For 90 seconds. So and at some point, also, my favorite thing is in one of the stories I read about this, Joni Ernst made a hand gesture that people said was her doing the sign of the cross. And then she claimed that she was motioning for John Thune to do what? What do they cross to each other? Like what? Like what? She covered
their,
it by claiming she was doing
secret
like,
handshake
like a secret like, motion
right.
to another senator. But like what could it have been
if
referencing?
If I do a sign of the cross, then you'll know to like, get Mitch out of
right.
the, off the podium.
Like what are you talking about? So, and Mitch McConnell's not been well.
No,
he's
not
been tripping
well.
Up a storm.
Yeah.
And old
yeah,
people, when
been,
they fall down, is very dangerous.
Yeah, he's fallen. Well, right. Well, he fell the one time and then he was out of the Senate for
yeah,
like
remember when he just
3 weeks
disappeared?
Or so. Yeah, he was gone.
And no one would tell us why he needed to be in the hospital for three
yeah.
weeks over a minor trip.
Yeah, well, he obviously had like a major concussion.
Yeah.
And maybe had some other issue happened at the same time.
Obviously,
that
he's having some brain issues.
They didn't tell us about. He's having some brain issues.
And then he tripped again recently.
Oh yeah,
at the airport.
Yeah, because they've been using of late a wheelchair to get him around the airport.
Yeah.
Have you seen all of the TikTok memes with him?
Oh yeah,
making that face, and it's sort of like, you know, me when I'm stoned trying to order at Taco Bell, or, you know, whatever other thing it is.
One thing I've really been enjoying about this is the extent to which Gen Z is like, we don't have to be polite about this.
Oh, 100%.
Because I couldn't agree more.
I completely agree.
When an evil
agree,
person has something bad happen to them, you're allowed to chortle.
I completely agree. Well, and I also feel like it has really sort of like, you know, look, I think for this week specifically anyway, Biden somehow was able to sort of like stay out of this conversation because everybody was sort of like, you know, too focused on the two things that happened. We'll get to Feinstein in a second. But like, this is a thing where like, I think the other thing that came of this, and people have been saying it for a while, but I think it really became crystallized in everyone's brain that we shouldn't be looking for the world's oldest people to run the free world.
Yeah.
And so like, we're focused on Mitch McConnell and Dianne Feinstein right now. But like, the next time Joe Biden does something that an 82-year-old would do, people are going to have thoughts about it. Because I saw a lot of people who I know darn good and well are, you know, borderline blue MAGA people shitting on Dianne Feinstein this week. So and that has not happened, obviously.
And
you know, we've talked about a lot of Democrats being like, it's misogynistic to say that she should retire. That ship has sailed, and that was only months ago that was the conversation.
Yeah.
So, like, people are ready to be done with the olds in federal government.
And Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden are the same age, by the way. So, that's...
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
I don't...
That's, yeah, but, like, exactly the same age. Like, right, not the same age in the way that old people are all the same age. They're, like, for the listeners, they are literally the same age. And so, this is maybe a sign... Because I think also, like, listen, Dianne Feinstein is 10 years older than both these schools. And so she should have known 10 years ago would be the appropriate time for her to have thought to herself, I'm too old for this. And she didn't heed that call.
No.
But like, if Mitch McConnell cannot handle tripping without 3 weeks in the hospital and having weird brain lapses mid news conference, then like, maybe aside from my own sort of moral, you know, argument for why old people should not get to be the president, which is that they don't have to care about the future.
Right.
They don't care if you... 2 weeks from now is the only future they need to care about. Like,
and as it turns out, they don't.
They don't. Exactly. No, exactly. Like, I think we have a proven track record now that old people don't care enough about the future to be good, you know, future leaders.
Right.
I mean, that's... Like, it's fine if you want to, like... There are plenty of old people that I know that care about the future because they care about their children. But that's not the same thing as your own personal survival being at stake.
Right.
You can sort of care without having this sort of personal empathy that you need to care enough. And I think that's where we find ourselves right now with these people.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden are the exact same age. And Mitch McConnell's failing health, which is only going to keep failing, is going to be, I think, as you're saying,
I just think that at some point Biden gets tied into the conversation with the two of these.
Oh, yeah.
With, because I've been seeing a lot of like tweets and memes and various things like with Feinstein and McConnell saying something to the effect of like, you know, people are too old in government.
Yeah.
You know, except funnier things.
Biden's
lucky that he's not the third person photographed in this thing that's moving around the internet right now.
I just Googled McConnell Biden.
Yeah.
And the first news story that came up was a Reuters story that is from 2 days ago that says, McConnell laps, Biden stumble, highlight advanced age of U.S. leaders. Well, so I feel like he's not going to escape entirely unscathed.
No.
Too unscathed as it is because he's not doing anything funny currently. Right. But,
Should we say what Dianne Feinstein did?
Yeah, so Dianne Feinstein was in a Senate appropriations vote.
Right.
And they were casting votes, and you know, in the Senate, they do their old timey, like whatever. So her name was called and Patty Murray tried to prompt her and she started to confusedly read from some prepared remarks,
which I was impressed by, which is a low bar, obviously,
she started
reading from some sort of remark. I don't know. That's on her staff for having those in front of her.
Yeah. Don't put anything in front of her that
it's
she's
just
not
like,
supposed to be doing.
Just a giant crayon, you know, AYE in the largest font possible on a sheet of paper for her She doesn't need other words.
No, don't confuse her.
Right. But she was able to successfully read, so kudos to her.
Right. And then Patty Murray, an aide started to interrupt her and whispered in her ear, and then Patty Murray was like, yeah, just say I.
Right.
And then...
And then didn't she say, like, hi?
She said, okay, just.
Oh, okay.
And then Patty Murray was like, I. And then finally she said, I. But she basically didn't know where she was or what she was doing, and she had to be prodded into casting a vote, which is not the situation that you want your elected leaders to be in. You want them to be comfortable casting a vote of their own volition.
Yeah.
You don't want Patty Murray to have to coach you through casting a vote that is just you saying I.
Yeah.
And this is for the NDAA. This is like a major legislative package that happens every year. It's not like some... It wasn't a confusing hearing is what I'm saying.
It's when we, you know, tell the government that they can spend way too much money on the military spending.
Yeah. This is when we yearly spend all of our tax dollars on killing people.
Yeah. By the way, did you see, I should have thrown it on here, in regards to Mitch McConnell, the Kentucky legislature passed a bill fairly recently where if a legislator, like, where basically a member of that party has to be appointed if they die or leave office or whatever else. And it was designed specifically sort of around the concern that Mitch McConnell was like 1,000 years old. And Andy Beshear, who's a Democrat, the governor of Kentucky, vetoed it, but it got overridden in the Kentucky legislature. But apparently Beshear intends to nominate a Democrat because he thinks that bill is illegal and he thinks that he would win in a court fight. So there is this weird thing that we could have like a major like kerfluffle in Kentucky if McConnell is unable to finish his term for whatever reason.
Exciting.
Which is probably why he's continuing to stick it out. I don't know why Feinstein is doing it, but at least in McConnell's situation, I think they're afraid that like not only would they
lose
like,
their
leadership, but they would literally like lose a actual seat
in a very
to a Democrat in Kentucky of all places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope that happens.
Yeah.
I hope chaos reigns.
Same.
I mean, that's That's something that I feel like is a situation Democrats would get themselves into. I'm shocked that the Republican Party is in this kind of a situation.
Yeah, I know.
But.
Well, they tried. They tried their best to circumvent the situation, which is why the legislature did what they did. But it's just it's probably illegal. But, you know, go figure that they would do something that's probably illegal.
At least they're trying. We don't even try.
That's exactly right.
In any case, so I think your important takeaways here are that stop voting for people that are in their 80s.
Yeah, we didn't have to vote for Dianne Feinstein the last two times that she ran for Senate.
No.
I did.
Right.
But nobody else
had to either. And listen, I think all the time about the fact that we could have just kept Kevin DeLeon out of trouble if we had just put him in the Senate instead of letting him go to the LA City Council. Where
we're supposed to not remind people that that was who was running against her.
But haven't you ever thought to yourself, like, maybe he could have... Listen, is he a bad guy? Sure. Sure.
Sure.
Maybe we wouldn't have found out he was a bad guy. Maybe we didn't have to go through this heartache.
Is it better that we found out?
No, he's still in the fucking city council.
Oh, that's true. It didn't help anybody.
Didn't help anyone.
That's true. Right.
It would have been fine if we had found out and he'd gone away.
Now we just have a known racist.
Now we have a known racist in the city council.
Yeah.
In any case, that's the news. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.